Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where today we're asking, what is the magic of the Hay Festival? Hay is the annual literature bonanza that takes place in the town of Hay-on-Wye. Even when the festival isn't there, the residents of this picturesque hamlet are knee-deep in books, as it boasts dozens of bookshops on its meandering streets. But every May, the festival hits Hay and the area explodes into a hive of busy minds brimming with ideas and opinions. Hay Festival was launched in 1988 by Norman Florence, his wife Rhoda, and his son Peter, and this year celebrates 30 years of bringing together international writers, politicians, artists, musicians, actors, basically anyone with a thought worth sharing to this little green spot in Wales. And it's not just here that they gather either. Hay has travelled over its 30 years from Cartagena to Beirut to Budapest to Nairobi and plenty of other places besides. So what has this Goliath celebration of books done to be so successful? On the show today, we're going to meet some Hay regulars to find out what's the magic of Hay. First of all, we go to our woman on the ground, Georgina Godwin. Georgina is one of the many who return to the Hay Festival every year. She chairs talks, interviews authors, and of course attends the parties. Georgina, welcome to the programme. We spoke a few weeks ago about the Hay Festival turning 30. Now it's happened. How have the celebrations gone down? Was there a dry eye in the house or a dry glass?
Certainly no dry glasses, refilled plentifully. It's been absolutely great. The feeling around the festival has just been completely buzzing. Everybody really wanting to join in with the celebratory atmosphere. All of the events planned for the 30-year celebration have gone off marvellously. So there have been the reformations, looking at how you would redefine things like masculinity was really interesting, how you would redefine borders, what you do when you want to reinvent the way we look at food, all of those sort of things gone down extremely well. Then we've had various other things like the launch of the Hay 30, and that's a book that has a lot of the last 30 years of interviews, 30 of the best 30 interviews in the book. It's marvellously put together and is a way for people just to look back over the highlights of the festival.
Well, it sounds like amazing stuff. So for the uninitiated, Georgina, how much of the programming at Hay is non-book related, is more idea, philosophical, political, world affairs related, or simply a good yarn? And how much of it is specifically about authors that have books out coming and explaining what they've done?
You know, I think it's a rough 50-50 split. There are a lot of authors here, obviously, but a lot of them are doing both. So, for instance, you have the human rights lawyer, Philippe Sands, who's talking about his marvellous book, East-West Street, but he's also talking about various ideas to do with human rights, to do with migration and things. He's in conversation with a number of amazing people. Then there's Bernie Sanders here, who, of course, is a senator, unsuccessful candidate in the US elections. A lot of security around that, of course, and a lot of buzz about the fact.
Yeah, who's done well? I mean, Bernie Sanders has been sort of doing the rounds in the UK for the last week or two here and adding some weight to the British election coverage as well. How does someone like that fit into it? I mean, I presume you have to book early to see someone like that. Does it feel like that they're on a bit of a gravy train, or does sort of Hay bring in, you know, all sorts of people, bookish and non?
Absolutely, all sorts of people. And I think Bernie's visit was actually planned around the fact that he was going to be at Hay. All of the other events kind of an add-on to his star performance, which is here. There have been a number of people, though, who've really, really stood out. I interviewed a man called Peter Wollibon, who is German, and he wrote a book called The Secret Life of Trees, in which he says, it's so fantastic that, you know, trees can taste, they can speak, talk to each other, that is, they suckle their young and all sorts. And that went down an absolute storm, huge full house, lots and lots of media interest in it, because, of course, he makes this intelligible to a normal non-scientific population. And I think that's what it's about when you talk about the sort of various think pieces, that although nobody talks down to their audience in any way, it's still very much, it's a conversation amongst equals, but it's explaining things that perhaps we haven't really thought about before.
And what about the idea of a consensus at Hay? Is everyone clapping at the same bits? Are there any hecklers? A politician like Bernie Sanders, a lot of people might be wandering around with a Guardian tote bag at the Hay Festival, let's face it. Is everyone singing from the same hymn sheet, or is there a nice amount of disagreement?
yes, this is clearly your Guardian reading public, but not everybody. There's a pretty wide demographic, I'd say. Lot of youngsters here. I haven't noticed so many young people here before. A lot of different sort of ethnicities as well. It seems pretty mixed to me, or at least more mixed than it has been in previous years. And I think that, yeah, across the spectrum in terms of politics, but of course, because of the very nature of the festival, more left-leaning.
I'm getting a sense of a festival that allows the book business, which clearly doesn't exist in a vacuum, but authors kind of, you know, the art of an author is fairly solitary. Does it have this kind of like great kind of spring feeling of everyone's getting out of their studies, everyone's getting out of the press release as well of their book, and out of the stuffy publishing houses of London and the world, and telling people and showing people the fibre of their fabric? Is that kind of what this is about, making those ideas very real?
Absolutely, and certainly for the authors, it is a chance to finally find your workmates. You know, it is a very, very solitary occupation, and here you're amongst people who understand what you do every day and can celebrate it. And there's so many amazing literary conversations going on. Wherever you turn, you'll find amazing authors talking to each other about their process. And then, of course, that conversation continues on the stage. Yesterday, I spoke to the wonderful Edward Docks, who's getting amazing reviews for his book, Let Go My Hand, alongside Kate Hamer, who wrote the bestseller Girl in a Red Coat. She'd just come out with The Doll Funeral, and they had a really stimulating discussion about how and why you write about family, whether you should censor yourself, and how that process works. And I think those kinds of conversations are going on not only on stages but on sofas, across restaurant tables, and not even just at the festival site, which is enormous, but all over Hay, where the whole town has been taken over by this amazing festival.
So just before you go, Georgina, go off to your next interview, your next nice luncheon, by the sound of it in the background. I can hear the clatter of cutlery, I'm sure, being assembled. What happens for the rest of today? Give me a sense of it, and give me a sense of how easy it is maybe to get around town. It's a small place. It's done on foot, I suppose. But how long does it take you to walk from one end of a room to another when you know so many people?
It is difficult, I have to say, and unfortunately what you have to do, particularly if you're going from A to B quite quickly, is to try and get blinkered and put your head down and just go, because it's quite difficult otherwise. Of course, parking a bit of a nightmare here. I'm lucky enough to have my car here, so I'm bombing around a bit, but parking slightly illegally, I have to say, some of the time. Today I have Zan Brooks, who is the wonderful writer and film critic. He's just written his first novel, really, really dark book, so we're going to be talking about that a little bit later. And of course, Bryony Gordon is here, who wrote the wonderful series Mad Girl. And then I'll be speaking to Dominic Drumgool, who is originally from the Globe Theatre. He took a production of Hamlet out to 200 different countries across the world. So I'll be finding out about how that happened and what he learned about the play and about the world.
Finally then, where is the best drink to be had in town? Is there one pub, one bar, which is the kind of unofficial after party, or the hub of the festival, Georgina?
Well, they're very cleverly named Baskerville Hall, which is a big kind of stately home just outside Hay that's been turned into a kind of after-hours disco. And it's called, well, you wouldn't expect less from Hay, Sound of the Baskervilles.
She ends on a pun. No little wonder she's our star booking. Georgina Godwin, have a great rest of your day and a great rest of Hay. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, when Georgina's not gallivanting around Welsh fields with writers, she's the presenter of Monocle's book show, Meet the Writers. For a recent episode, she caught up with some of the authors, speakers and organisers taking part in this year's affair to muse on some of their favourite memories of the festival. We've picked out some of the highlights. Here are the voices of Peter Florence, Hannah Rothschild, Philip Sands, Tamima Anam and Safraz Manzoor.
It's a wonderful, wonderful moment for people to engage with big ideas. The world seems as if it's in this rupture of political turmoil, but actually there's a huge degree of constancy, and we still need people to think it better and dream it better and imagine it better.
I mean, we had that moment when Jane Fonda, do you remember, who had campaigned against Robert McNamara, who thought that he'd brought about these appalling American wars, and she came face to face with him in the green room, and we all waited to see whether she'd high kick him, you know, in her kind of spandex shorts and attack him. And of course, she was rather charmed. And Paul McNamara, having got through that particular ordeal that night, went into what he thought was his bathroom in his underpants to bump straight into Rosie Boycott, who was wearing rather less than he was. So, I mean, that is a typical Hay kind of, you know, conflagration, I should say. Yeah.
Why do you think it works so well?
I think it's partly because we're taken out of our comfort zone and we're put in a kind of field, effectively, in the middle of Wales. Well, not quite in the middle, but kind of getting towards the middle. There's no phone reception, there's no internet, and you are literally put into a kind of secret world. And then you wander from event to event and listening to people who you'd never, ever listened to before. I mean, I would never get to meet a snake charmer, you know, in any other life. I would never hear Terry Jones talking about Chaucer. I would never hear somebody talking about the stars. You know, I might well go and listen to Howard Jacobson or Martin Amis. They're much more in my comfort zone. But I think what happens, you're taken out of your own kind of milieu and you're put into this extraordinary environment and introduced to people and disciplines that you can't even imagine.
It's not a place for clobbering people. It's a place for encouraging people to open up. And the magical interview is the interview where someone says something unexpected. And for example, I interviewed Jimmy Carter a few years back, and it was at the time that George W. Bush had decided to embrace torture. I'd written a book actually about torture in the Bush administration. And I asked Jimmy Carter whether he thought George W. Bush should be investigated for the international crime of torture. And I'd pointed out to him the Pinochet principle, and Bush couldn't go travelling and everything anymore outside the United States, and Carter was terrific. He just looked at me and very wryly he said, "I wish President Bush a long and happy retirement inside the United States." It was a very subtle way of saying, I don't think he should be indicted, arrested, interfered with outside the United States, but equally I don't think he should be travelling outside the United States. It was very subtle, unexpected and interesting for that. It's those tiny unexpected moments. A really good interviewee, someone who's smarter than you, who's quicker than you, who's ahead of you. There's little preparation. The interviewees, in my case, don't get the questions in advance. And when I'm being interviewed, I don't want to know in advance what I'm going to be asked. It's the spontaneity, it's the unexpected, it's the intimacy that makes a session really interesting.
I got a call sort of in July from someone from Lindy, the Hay Festival, and she said, "We want to come to Bangladesh. What do you think?" And of course, my intuition was, please don't come. It's going to be a disaster. But they came anyway, and it was they came for 18 hours, arrived at 5 a.m. and left kind of 3 a.m. the next day. And it was incredible. We had a tiny festival for one day. Lots of people showed up, students, university professors, poets. It was really magical, and it was a festival that it now continues, has a different name, but it's ongoing. So that was kind of an incredible moment for the city, and for me, realizing that actually I could look at my city in a slightly different light, as a place of literature and poetry, not just as the shabby old city that I had always slightly been embarrassed of. For me, when I've seen people in the audience that I've long admired, it just brings the whole thing alive. It brings the whole process of storytelling alive. The best sessions are often very funny, where a writer that you may have read in a lot of seriousness and felt possibly even intimidated by, even as you read their work, comes out and is a full human being in all their kind of foibles and idiosyncrasies. So I just think there's a real magic there, and the audiences are always incredible, as they were in Dhaka, amazingly.
I guess the most important Hay for me was the Hay of 2008, and I went in
It was as ever, it was the last week of May, and I was actually in quite a depressed state of mind because I'd recently ended a relationship, and you know, I was about to turn 37, I think, and I was just feeling quite sort of down about life. And so I go to the festival, and the great thing I think about the festival is that it's a place where you are constantly stimulated by what's going on around you. So immediately you're kind of taken out of your misery. So the festival was great, and then on the Sunday, coming back to London from the festival, I'm sitting on the train from Hereford Station going back to Paddington, and I find myself sitting opposite a woman. And she's hugely attractive and way out of my league. But the train journey, as you probably know, is quite a long one to Paddington. It takes something like 3.5 hours. So being a bit of a fast mover, after about 2 hours, I said hello. And so we started talking, and what was interesting was that became a unifying thing, because I saw that she had a cloth bag with the Hay Festival logo on it. So I knew she'd been there. That meant there was an easy way to talk. And we could talk about some similarities about the things that we had in common, which was about books and being interested in ideas. That led me to rather cheekily ask if I could see her again. And we managed to have a date the following Saturday. And this was on June the 7th of 2008. And 2 years, 2 months and 2 weeks after that first date, we got married. The whole project of literature is about other people. I mean, more than any other art form, it's the way in which we have invented to allow ourselves to see the world as other people see it, through other people's eyes and from other people's perspectives. And you know, cinema, art, music doesn't quite do that. They all do other wonderful things, but they don't do that. And giving somebody a book is like an act of love. It's like saying, this knows me and recognizes me, and I would love you too. So I hope we can find common ground in this story. And that's an amazingly intimate thing to do.
Some of the voices of the writers participating in this year's Hay Festival there. Well, joining me now in the studio is another person who's experienced what Hay has to offer. It's my very own producer, Holly Fisher. Welcome to the programme, Holly.
Thanks, Rob.
Do you like it when we break the sort of fourth wall and you step into an apparition, like a dream sequence in a film?
It's
and
nice.
Holly's in the studio.
Yeah, just need some smoke and lights.
Yeah, exactly.
And
here she is.
It's nice to share the room with you rather than stare at you through the glass.
Huffing up the glass.
Yeah.
Like a child in a sweet shop.
Yeah,
or maybe that's the other way around. So we're talking about Hay Festival, Holly. I've not been to Hay Festival. Rather embarrassing. We were all meant to go, weren't we? We were all meant to go on a nice jolly, a culture team jolly to the Hay Festival. We had a few teething problems with the July-August issue of Monocle magazine. That's daylight in upon magic there. I wanted to talk to you about the experience of going there. Does it feel like you're suddenly going to big school? You know that thing where we go to music festivals and you kind of think, God, I don't know how I'm going to sort of learn my way around here. And what's the main event and how will I learn sort of where the cool places are, where the shortcuts, la, 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 la. How quickly does it do that when you've gone to Hay?
Well, I think you get to Hay and it's kind of set out in a big square. So you kind of just keep walking round and round and round and you think, I think I've got this.
You've covered it.
Yeah. But then you look at the programme and like, oh my God,
yeah,
I don't know where to start. There's so much happening there.
And what's the vibe? So are you a programme follower or are you a nose follower?
Well, I think with Hay, you have to be a programme follower because otherwise you don't get in, basically.
Yeah.
Everywhere's ticketed, so you've got to join the queues.
What sort of people are going? When we spoke to Georgina just now on the phone from Hay, we did mention the preponderance, possibly, of the Guardian tote bag.
Yeah.
Fine. Yeah. But do you feel like there's a sort of spread, or do you think that everyone is sort of arm in arm and tra-la-la-ing to the pub, you know, seeing the red flag?
There's definitely a jovial spirit, let's put it that way. Georgina's right, there's definitely that Guardian reading clientele there. But I suppose I get to see it from the other side, where you're with the press and you're with some of the speakers, and you know, it's a real mixed bag of people and everyone's got so many different things to talk about and things to say, and it's just a real nice meeting of minds.
And it's a funny thing from our sort of more musical backgrounds of these festivals and things. I mean, you know, see, there's the big art fairs that we get and all the rest of it as well, which are a little more highfalutin possibly, on the or the kind of food and beverage experience is probably that much more kind of refined possibly. But what's the thing, like, because people don't camp at this thing, do they? I mean, people presumably are finding B&Bs in the town and in the surrounding area and getting trains and taxis and all the rest of it into the town. So does it kind of feel like it's very much a daytime thing, or is it a kind of is it a day and night thing?
Well, for me, it was definitely a day and night thing.
Okay, good for you. We've got the culture show flag unfurled there, Holly, for all to see.
Yeah, flying high. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a very civilised affair. Everyone's showered, which I guess is nice, isn't it?
It takes a break from Green Man.
Yeah, quite a different vibe from Green Man.
but you know, that's the thing. I guess it's the success of it, of something that everyone sort of makes friends. Everyone makes friends and heads off to continue the conversation.
Yeah, and the nice thing about it is that you see these people that, you know, that you very much respect, and people whose opinions you think highly of, and then when you see them let loose on the dance floor...
That's good stuff.
That's always good fun, and that's maybe even more so than seeing your favourite band going for it.
Yeah, exactly.
And these are people who you might have paid to go and see, people who've been giving talks on all sorts, from the books they've written to politics to science to art. And, you know, you see these people interact with other people during the day as well. You know, you'll see an author go and speak to a scientist, and you can sort of see the sparks flying and the ideas coming together. And you kind of feel like this is a festival where at the end of 1,000 events, 1,000 new ideas are born.
Like the Pied Piper of Hamelin. To the culture show listening drinkers, Holly Fisher has sold us a good yarn. It's the 31st anniversary of Hay next year. It is not a round number. It is silly, but we must sort of hoist up our skirts and run to Hay next
year. Make it sillier.
How about it? Holly Fisher, thank you very much, as ever. Well, to end the show, let's hear from the man behind it all, Peter Florence. How does he think the 30th year of the Hay Festival has gone? What's he looking forward to over the next 30 years? He speaks to Georgina.
Peter, we're nearing the end of the festival now, or at least going into the final weekend, and I wonder if you look back at how it's been after a year, well, 30 years really, of preparation, how would you describe it?
It's a really old part of the festival right now, because on day one, it's like you're on the top of a hill and you've got this tyre, and you know that it's going to hit the bottom of the hill at some point, and you've somehow just got to stay on it. So you're running like crazy, and at some point you just think, do you know what, I'm still here, and actually there's a great view, and there's a pleasure in dancing on this tyre, and even though it's going faster than I can possibly believe it's going, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm a tyre dancer. And that's where we are right now, and it's great, and it's inspiring, and you begin to understand that it's like having a huge wave crash over you. And Coleridge has this brilliant, brilliant line about theatre criticism as opposed to literary criticism, and he says you go to the theatre and it's like having a wave crash over you, and the following morning you go back and you look at the markings on the sand to begin to understand what's happened to you. And I'm at the moment in that mind-blown stage of having just taken on 60 new ideas a day for 10 days, and my head's buzzing with everything that I've kind of heard, and I'm going to spend the next 30 years trying to absorb it and trying to just re-educate myself about the things that I now know that I didn't know 10 days ago.
Do you get to see many of the sessions yourself, given that obviously you're so integral to the organisation?
Not as nearly as many as I'd like. It's an occupational irony that you design this programme and then you don't get it live, but I pick it up. It's all in the archive. I can go back and have a look at it and listen to it later. I get to do the gigs that I'm doing on stage, and I've been just really lucky this year in some of those. I had the most extraordinary conversation earlier in the week with two mates of mine and a brand new guy called Lawrence Krauss, who's a very brilliant, quite extreme Dawkins End atheist. He's a physicist, an astrophysicist, as was Martin Rees, the astronomer royal who was on the panel, and Bettany Hughes and Stephen Fry, two classicists whom are exceptionally gifted and renaissance in the scale of their curiosity and interest. We had this really interesting conversation about what a new enlightenment might look like. What happens when you need to just re-examine the basis of reason and the quest that we're all on to understand more about the universe? I mean, our world primarily, but also the universe. And everybody came out of it thinking, that was a wonderful hour, but we've just started. I mean, this could go on for weeks, years, this conversation. And I guess that's what the festival is, really. It's a way of starting conversations that will go all over the place when they leave Hay on Wye. They'll take lots of different routes, lots of different sidetracks, and you suddenly realise that what you are is a sort of moment of evangelism for open-mindedness. Mm. And we just want to reassert that nobody has a lock on any perfect idea. No religion, no scientist, no politician. The most we can hope to do is stay flexible, responsive, and curiously, that's also our biological destiny. We are the great survivors. We are, what's the word? We have the ability to adapt. And just as evolution for humans changed from being physical evolution to being mental evolution, our minds was what changed our destiny as a species. Yeah, as a society or as a political entity or even as a small community, your health is basically measured in how you respond to whatever new circumstance it might be. And there are lots of changes coming for everyone, so let's see how we do. But however that might be, surely we're better off if we're open-minded about it.
There have been some wonderful thinkers, some wonderful ideas coming out of the festival, but also some great people here, authors, just talking about their books.
Politics and Society is non-fiction's preserve, and yet the people who give you the most intimate, profound, private insight into how we live are the fiction writers and the poets. You know, they're the ones who study that really dear, dear stuff of how we love and how we die and how we live. And they have to absorb all the information and all the fact and put it into stories that we all know to be true. And that is, it's a curious, it's not magic, nor is it alchemy. It's hard graft. It's people thinking and working and crafting at what they're doing, but it's also in the most simple terms about sensibility. It's about being empathetic. It's about trying to understand other people, because literature, and I profoundly believe this to be the core of our world, your world and my world, Georgina, because you talk to just as many writers as I do, and I think what literature does that no other art form ever does is give you that opportunity to perceive the world from somebody else's point of view, which is the most extraordinary humanity. And it's as if that leap, that imaginative leap into what would somebody else be thinking or feeling at this point, that's the core of our humanity. And it's also, I think, best served through literature. So in that sense, I'm just not trained. My wife's a trained art historian. She looks at pictures, she looks at clothes, she looks at space very differently to me. I just don't have that visual perception, but I think everything that I know about the world that's not directly from people is from literature, because it sort of conditions me into trying to get outside of myself.
Peter Florence there, bringing us to the end of today's show. And you can hear more about the Hay Festival over on our sister show, Meet the Writers, which is available at monocle.com/radio. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was breaking the fourth wall, Holly Fisher. And a special thanks, of course, to Georgina Godwin for this week's episode. Join us again at the same time next week. But for the time being, from me, Robert Bound, thanks for tuning in.